Blog Talk Radio.
One evening, an elderly Cherokee brave told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves that are inside us all. One is evil, one is angry. One is evil, it is angry, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other is good, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Grandfather, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the one you feed."
Amen.
This is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna let it work.
All right. Good evening. Good afternoon or good morning. Just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Okay, namaste, hola, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of your hosting duties, like we do every Thursday night, live here on Blog Talk Radio. It is April 8th, 2021. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties is my dad, my best friend, my amigo, the Lions historian, my dad, Bill Green. Good evening, Daddy-O. What's happening?
What's up, Wilfredo? Here we go again.
Here we go again. You know, I was just thinking that earlier, man, doing that, here we go again.
Man, you know, right on, though. You know, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. You know, I mean, the process.
Yeah.
Because I know eventually the process will lead to the results, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just that the process will lead to the result. Yeah, I think we're starting to see it. But it's just, you know, it's never the results that we want or when they want it, when we want it. And that's the hard part, having to remind, at least for me anyway. I'm not going to speak for anybody else. But, you know, we've talked a lot about processes and stuff, and it's a challenge. You know, you can give all the good, the quote, the best quotes in the world, but
most of the best quotes are written by dead people, so they already done all their processing. You know, but at least they left hints. But you know, I think, you know, what makes a process is that it, you know, the results aren't in yet. You know, so it wouldn't be a process otherwise. And I think it's a different flow depending. You know, some processes go smoothly, even on time, you know, recognizable, you know, with anticipated and expected outcomes, you know, that rarely are disappointing. But that's not what you're talking about, I know. that's the stuff quotes are made out of, you know.
Yeah.
But it's that other stuff, man. That the other stuff, quotes haven't been written yet. You know, those are left for the people going through them to write. I mean, they're all good, you know, no question about it, you know. The opportunity that God sends does not awaken him who is asleep. Yeah. Okay. You know. If you don't know who you are, anybody can name you. Yeah. Okay. You know.
Dang.
You know,
I'm laughing because you just spit two of them out, and I'm still trying to think of one right now.
We didn't anticipate doing this, so it wasn't no chance to warm up to it. You know, these are the ones that are just, you know, I just got to them before you did. You know, if you got to them first,
let me look
through
my notes
where you are. Yeah, right on. Yeah. You know, what's my favorite? You know, I was of no use until I realized God did not intend me to be a great man. You know, like, yeah, okay. And that, you know, and that last one right there, it's like, you know, it speaks near, dear and deeply into my heart, no question about it. But when I'm in the process of trying to figure out what's next, what the expectation is, you know, what is it that I want? You know, as opposed to what is it that I need? You know, how will I be able to define the outcome? Will it be successful? You know, all those things, you know, are somewhere wrapped up in there, you know, that are, I love when you do the two wolves thing, you know, that's all wrapped up in my ego, and my ego is always hungry for success, you know. So the opportunity that God sends, you know, does not awaken him who is asleep. Well, okay, but how do I know I'm woke? You know, or how do I, you know, and, you know, I was of no use, you know, until I realized God did not intend me to be a great man. So what does that mean? Does that mean through some kind of false humility I'm supposed to be cool, just, you know, walking in sandals, you know, with robes on, selling poppies along the side of the road? You know, it's a hard thing, man, when we're in the midst of the process, you know, to, especially when it's one of those that are just heavy laden with, you know, ego dense. You know, it's hard to know what the expected outcome should be. So anyway, I'm not going to get into all that. I understand. Matter of fact, if my notes serve me, you may very well be answering a lot of the questions to these things with what you're going to be kicking us off with tonight, right?
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, like I say, we've danced around with these discussions of process, and you know, I want to kick off the show early this time and just touch on some things about goals. Last week we didn't really get a chance to really to dive into it. I kind of touched the surface a little bit before the end of the show last week, which was a whole lot of fun. Again, I was listening to it the other day, man. It was a lot of fun last week. But you had this
guy who just wouldn't shut up. That's why you didn't have no time.
Well, you know what? I mean, I think maybe my process is that I'm turning into that guy too, but I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. But
I'm trying to find my pad and paper right now, man.
Yeah, I mean, my pad and pen.
Stop it.
Get out of my head. Because I sure was about to remind everybody before we get into all of this rigmarole, whatchamajigs, et cetera, et cetera. Just a couple of reminders for all you listeners out there. The first thing is grab your pen and pad, pencil and paper, post a note in the marker, or even as we are, Dad and I are pretty inclined, we might do is grab the back of an envelope. But we just want to make sure that if you have questions, that you don't forget any questions. And who knows, you might even pick up some things from my dad and me, from me and my dad on these shows. You might want to take some notes for yourself in your own process or in your own process of establishing goals. So make sure you got something to write with. The second thing is the chat room is open. For those that are listening online with your free Blog Talk Radio account, I see people already chiming in, already coming in the chat room. Right. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Welcome. So the chat room is open, and again, you can access the chat room with your free Blog Talk Radio account. Now, what does that mean? Just real briefly, you set up a Blog Talk Radio account. Of course, you know, when you set up any profile on the Internet, sometimes they'll ask you for a credit card, but you will not be charged if you choose the free format. And you can just access our shows, and you can engage in our chat room. One thing that Dad and I really enjoy about doing these shows is the engagement with you all, the listeners. So not only can you do that in the chat room, but you can also give us a call directly on your phone. Whether you got an old-school flip phone or you still got a dial-up, you press a number, you know, at home or rotary or whatever. Our number here to dial in is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. And if you do want to chime in, if you want to come in live while, you know, we're engaged in the show here, just press 1 on the keypad, and it'll put your number in the queue, and we'll bring you in live.
My man.
So, our shows are live every Thursday. You have the ability as well to listen to our shows that are archived. Some of you might be listening to the show right now, maybe, you know, in the archive setting. Many different platforms are available, but from Google Podcasts to Apple Podcasts. We also, quick shout-out to our friends in Iowa, K-Dub Radio, dubcityradio.com, who are also rebroadcasting our shows, the Greenhouse Effect shows, on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And Write Your Own Book Club is also about to join on their Saturday broadcast as well, Saturday evenings. So, that's some of the announcement here and reminders. I think I covered everything. Is there anything I missed?
Well, if you missed it, I don't know about it. Sounds like you nailed everything to me.
I was chuckling a minute ago at the beginning of the show as far as the welcome And, you know, I say, you know, namaste. We're all familiar with that, and welcome. And Oki, and Oki is a hello greeting in Blackfoot. So that's a acknowledgement to our Blackfoot lineage, and hola as well, and our Spanish listeners out there as well. But I was chuckling because I'm like, man, if I add another language on here, man, we're going to have to add a whole another hour to this show, because I'm like, this is so long,
right,
man.
Yeah, yeah. No, man, it just seemed long to you because you were doing it, but it flowed. It was smooth. It was right on time, man. Yeah, right on
time. I just
time.
Wanted to share that. It was just a little chuckle moment. So how was your week, man? You know, we really haven't talked much since last week's episode. Oh wow!
Yeah, it's been a externally more so than internally. Internally is still rocking and rolling with the second vaccine shot, and trying to understand its effect. Artie just wrote on Facebook that her great grandmother was a Blackfoot Indian. That's pretty cool. I see you responding. Internally, understanding what my body's dealing with as far as this, foreign substance being introduced to it, and dealing with that what has come with it. And there's been some malaise, that has fed into, I think, a degree of nostalgia, which also bled into, laziness. Probably it all has to. That was a symptom they never acknowledged. They should have. They said, the second vaccine may cause laziness. I wish they had it, I'd have been cool then. But the externals, as far as the news since last week, which has been the news since the week before, with some extra things thrown in. It's been a heck of a thing. This country's in process right now, and I'm sure it's going through, its own separating the shaft from the wheat from the shaft, and what that requires, a lot of times, especially in ancient Egyptian times, the easiest way to separate the wheat from the chaff on windy days was to toss it up in the air and let the wind do the work. Of course, that meant that it would scatter, and others would have to pick up what came their way, so right down the line. So that's kind of where it's been for me this past week. It's just been a lot tossed up in the air and just watching the wind scatter it. And then deciding if I want to chase after it or not, because I'm telling you, man, this country's going through it right now, dude. I mean, but what's amazing to me, and I'm going to shut up and get out of your way, I promise, 1 minute, what just continues to amaze me, it's not new, it's an old thing. So much of what this country is going through, along with the racism, the hatred, and all that stuff, that it's almost like now as American as cherry pie, as H-Rap Brown put it. It's the shadow, of sex, man. It's this, this shadowy theme of sex that just keeps, revealing itself over and over again. And these folks just don't seem to want to acknowledge it. It's not the act. It's not the behavior. It's this ongoing theme, it's no dialogue. This country refuses to engage in dialogue around the themes of sexual wounding that has taken place in this country. We're only on the cusp of talking about racist hatred, but we haven't gotten to, we haven't gotten to the undercurrent of the sexual wounding, that has just taken place, that it's just, been par for this country. Man, I'm talking about this country as we know it, from the 17th century, more so the 18th century even, but the 17th century on through. It's just something to watch these folks still deal with these ongoing themes. you know, and these judgments around these things. So anyway, it's something,
like,
man.
Like, would you mind elaborating, going a little further into that? What do you mean?
Well, okay, let's deal with, you know, let's deal with what we have. This country, it doesn't matter what we believe. Let's deal with what we have. And what we have is a country that loves to think of its motto as "In God We Trust," and, you know, God has, you know, has an air of favoritism that is placed around this country, you know, the United States. And, okay, so with that in mind, and then going into how then do we begin to understand the dialogue of God as it relates to America? Well, judgments begin to kick in almost right away. People begin to piecemeal what is a convenient judgment of Scripture and leave out what is a requirement, you know, almost constantly. You know, like, let's deal with homosexuality. You know, it's a crazy, just this one thing, but then I'm going to shut up. Just this one. You know,
yeah.
It's a crazy thing that I see that affects me. You know, it's like, so what we as Christians supposedly have no issue with love. You know, we as Christians seem to have a real issue with sex. Like, sex is dirty, save it for the person you marry. But make sure the person you marry is not the person of the same sex. Okay, fine. But here's my thing. Is the issue about homosexuality in America because of the sexual act or because of the love two people feel for each other? See, it's like, are you only negative in my eyes and therefore my judgment is fair if you are engaging in sex as a homosexual, or is it just being one, even though you are sharing love, just the idea of being recognized, admitted, owning up to being who I am, homosexual? Do I have kind of, therefore, do I as America have a sort of a double standard when it comes to love? Like, love only applies to heterosexuals, but even then, heterosexuals who aren't engaging in extramarital sex or fornication or adultery, you know, so it's like, it's okay if, as long as you're heterosexual, you get to do all them things. So the Bible is pretty clear as far as the one I read. It's like, no, the issues is sex, regardless of who you deal with. The Bible don't show no favor unless you marry. You know, so but regardless of all that, the overall thing, you know, at least the Bible I read says that, you know, the greatest commandment of all, you know, is to love one another. But it don't stop right there. It says, as I have loved you, also love one another. So it's like, I got to first get this thing down about how I'm going to love my fellows before I can even begin to apply Jesus' idea of love. I haven't figured out my idea or the American idea. And see, that whole thing of sex then is, to me, you know, shadowed by the other things, you know, that lack of love is immediately reflective of: racism, hatred. You know, I'm not talking about crazy. I'm talking about hatred. Crazy is another, you know, category. You know, I don't know where crazy fits in. But hatred, you know, that's learned. You know, crazy is diagnosed. You know, so anyway, man, but the theme of, you know, of sex, that's what we never talk about. You know, instead, that's what we condemn people around. The same people who condemn other people almost always wind up falling into the shadow of sex around their own behavior. You know, I mean, like, even when it comes to, like, men cheating on their wife, you know, the other person is hardly ever talked about. It's like he ain't cheating by himself. Oh, yeah, then we talk about pornography, you know. But then that brings up another thing, you know. But it's like, but we ain't, you know, ain't nobody ragging the person who's cheating with the dude, you know, because chances are, you know, they know he's hooked up with somebody else, but that ain't got nothing to do with it. It's something he has that they want, even if it's the fact that, you know, he's with somebody else, you know. And I want to know, I beat that person to the game. But it's what we don't ever talk about, these, you know, these things. And I watch it play out constantly with the young, you know, because those who are in a place of guidance with regards to the morality of sex, let's say, because we don't have an open dialogue to even enter into the realm of conversation, you know, these young folks, just like you, just like me, you know, we're left to discover what we discover on the streets and in the church. On the streets, we're told it's cool, and in church, we're told it's dirty, and save it for the one you marry. Well, if I spend the first 20, 25 years of my life hearing sex is dirty, then how do I shift out of that when I'm suddenly married to somebody? You know, anyway, man, if you convince me that sex is dirty all of my formative years as an adult, I'm still going to approach the dirtiness of sex in my behavior. I'm still going to feel guilty even when I engage in sex with the person, you know, I'm married to. You know, I'll and it'll show up in my behavior in one form or another. Man, it happens all the time, man, all the time. You know, so anyway, man.
Yeah, that shadow, No, you're good, man. We got plenty of time. No, that shadow is something else. I remember many unintended social media barrages I received. I think you might remember, you know, years back when I tried to bring up, you know, the shadow of sex and the lack of discussion that we have. You know, the whole point was the lack of discussions, and, you know, here we are with these different ways that the younger generation can see these things and identify with these things, but they don't know what it is, and they just have to kind of figure it out, you know. You know, it's
They just got to figure it out.
And then if we try to have dialogue about it, you know, it turns into something else, unintentional, but
judgment.
It turns into
judgment.
Okay,
you know,
there
more
it is.
So than not, judgment or projections or all of those other themes. You know, whenever you know, people immediately fall into a place of engaging in defense mechanisms anytime we're talking about something we don't know anything about. You know, right away, my defense mechanisms kick in. You know, something I don't know about, right away, I have to defend my ignorance. You know, and I defend my ignorance with self-righteousness all the time. You know, and I'm saying I ain't saying you. You know, and I have to get past that theme of self-righteousness before I can even begin to hear conversations through my ears of ignorance. You know, I have to be willing to go through that ego death. I have to be willing to admit, you know what, I don't know a damn thing about this other than my reactions to it and my judgments about it. You know, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything. I remember when I was early on as a counselor working with substance abusers, alcoholics, drug addicts, whatever you want to call, you know, the lost souls. And it was suggested to me, you know, at a workshop, I had been maybe 4 or 5 years into the theme of counseling and not really yet identifying my niche. I was still on the idea, the crusade, that I was going to be all things to all people, and it was driving me crazy because I found out I don't know a lot about all people, you know. And so, I can stereotype the hell out of anybody, but, you know. So I had the all people question, and one of the trainers said, I would suggest that you do something contrary to anything else you've ever been taught or anything else you've ever learned. And the person went on to say, I understand you're in the 12-step program, you're a recovering alcoholic, and you use that probably wisely as you're working with other alcoholics. And about it. Said, have you ever gone to a gay AA meeting? It's like, oh, hell no. It was my reaction. And I think it might have even been my response. I'm not sure because I couldn't, my defense mechanism kicked in so loud I couldn't even hear myself. But when I finally settled down and got out of the way of myself, you know, I heard what the statement and the challenge was encouraging me to pursue. You know, broaden the scope of your understanding when it comes to the field of not just counseling, but the realm of the, you know, addicted world as well. You know, you don't know how to deal with a gay alcoholic if they show up at your men's halfway house on the south side of Chicago that's 99% black and having grown up in an atmosphere that suggested, you know, black men are never homosexuals. You know, so what are you going to use as the base of your understanding? You know, and it's like, wow. So I stood up to the challenge, and man, it was the most enlightening thing, self-enlightenment, that I ever could have encountered, you know, when I realized how thick my defense mechanisms were based on a trained response to how I was conditioned to go through life, you know, and it opened my eyes to dialogue, that no matter how uncomfortable I may seem to feel in any situation when it comes to the questions of addictive behavior, all dialogue is possible as long as I'm willing to engage in it. That was a life changing moment for me, man. You know, not just as a counselor, but as, you know, a black male human being trying to figure out how to do this thing, or a black male spiritual being trying to figure out how to do this thing called human. You know, all of a sudden I put spiritual above human, and it made all the difference in the world for me. There's so many times I put human above spiritual, and that's all ego. You know, that's why I love that two wolf thing that you recite at the beginning of every show, you know, because the first wolf you talk about is pure ego. And I love the fact that the last word in that is ego, you know.
Yeah.
And the second wolf you talk about is pure spirit, and it's all about harmony, you know, and it's all about harmony through conflict, conflict born out of the ego and harmony born out of the spirit. You know, and both need each other, right? And it's the struggle of the human endeavor is to balance that diet.
Yeah.
So
I never really looked at ignorance as being the catalyst, I guess, of judgment.
Well, that's just how I see it. Yeah, but what do I know?
What do I know? You know, I'm thinking about reflecting back this morning. So, ladies and gentlemen, just I realized that doing these shows with my dad, I get kind of caught up sometimes. Well, we both get caught up sometimes, and sometimes
hey,
the shows
man,
become.
Hey, man, I was about to say you.
We get caught up. And then sometimes the shows just become, you know, they have segments of them, of their own. Of its own, I should say, and you know, it becomes a phone call, as Dad puts it. So sometimes you guys are not sure what the hell we're talking about. So every morning, just about every morning, you know, my dad sends me and my brothers Armand and Brandon scriptures based on. Mm-hmm. Prayer circles that he's a part of and things like that. So he said some scripture this morning. So I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but, you know, you mentioned this morning, and I don't know if this was your intention, but even this morning you talked about how it's so easy and convenient to judge. But you continue to say,
I didn't even think about that until you're saying it right now, man. Really, seriously.
So,
you know, wow.
Yeah, and so in the follow-up that Dad sent, in the scripture that he sent us this morning, he said that it's easier and convenient to judge, and he hopes that he does so more with ignorance than willful intent, and so that he may be corrected by God. Amen. And I never really, you know, in just talking right now and then reflecting back to that, I never really thought about that and how quickly we are to judge. And I'm like, well, why is that? Because it will come out so fast before you can catch it, you know. And like, man, I didn't mean to do it, but it just came out, you know. Like,
yeah.
You say, we don't,
yeah,
you,
man.
You know,
yeah.
Or him, you know. No. But I just wanted to share that, you know. And so this was kind of an aha moment for me, even. Thinking of these last 7 days, you know, Easter just passed, right? And, you know, even Easter, yeah, as commercial as it is, there's still lessons, I think, that we can still learn from what it may present. And so there was something I saw on social media, and it had something to do, I should have kept a copy of it, but it was just talking about unconditional love, the unconditional love of Jesus that even Judas ate. And it talked about how even though Jesus knew he was going to be betrayed, even though he knew all these things was going to happen, you know, Judas still sat at the table. He still ate. He still got his feet washed. He was still receiving all this unconditional love as the other disciples did too. But it's that struggle for me personally. It's that struggle of unconditional love, because there's these moments that I will judge and don't even know why I'm judging, through ignorance or whatever. Now, you know, it's just a little bit of light that I've gotten in this just brief 40 minute opening of the show. I just think it's really cool and enlightening. I just wanted to share that.
I hope we didn't chase Artie out of the room because of this.
Well, Artie been left.
Yeah, left the building.
She left a minute ago. But, no. But she had hinted, I think she hinted in the chat room that she only had a few minutes, but she just wanted to take those few minutes to check us out while it looks like she had something else to do. But, you know, in just this reflection of the last week, you know, like I said, Easter just went by. I was glad I was able to share that. So thank
Let
you.
Let me ask you another question
you
right
that.
Quick before we shift out, man.
Sure.
How do you pronounce that other name in the chat room? Chayas?
So it's, I don't think it's a name. But
but how do you pronounce it?
I don't know. Chinese.
All right.
It's just.
I don't know. I was just showing my ignorance.
All
right. Okay, I'm good. Yeah, all right. Good stuff. Good points made, and thank you for engaging that. You know, again, if for no other reason. The dialogue doesn't happen often enough, so thank you for creating the opportunity to have a few minutes of dialogue about it. Right on, man.
Yeah, cool.
Because I don't ever talk about this on my prayer circle, and I never would. My mama raised an alcoholic, not a fool. I don't know, man. Homosexuality, man, that's out, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't. Yeah, okay. I'm not going to go there as far as that part is concerned. But
let it fizzle, yeah, man. Yeah.
But you know, that kind of plays into a little bit. So these last couple of days, I've been kind of off my square a little bit. Now, you know, I can't use the vaccination shot as the reason for my laziness or whatever or what's been going on with me. You know, but I've been off, you know, I've been off my square this weekend, and Sometimes it happens really close to Thursday. It's really, it's like, I don't know, it's like I get cranked up in a different way when we do these shows, especially Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes sometimes I go through these moments, and it's not a, well, we can say it's a struggle, but I just need to at times remind myself of the why. You know, why do we do this show on Thursdays, you know? And it's just for this brief moment that we have, you know, where you may not be comfortable with talking about homosexuality with some people, but you feel comfortable with talking about it here. You may not be comfortable with talking about Asian hate, but you're comfortable with talking about it here. You may not be talking about how you're struggling with some personal things.
Right.
But you don't really have somebody to talk about it, but you have it here. I see that you found out what the initials are. Shahid.
Yeah.
So I was kind of struggling with that, even up to the top of the hour here at the beginning of the show, ladies and gentlemen. I was just kind of off a little bit today. This last week, and so just having this brief discussion about that just kind of gave me a little affirmation. So thank you, you know, for opening that up, Dan. I appreciate that. Thank you. And that kind of brings us really into some things that I wanted to touch on that I didn't really get a chance to touch on last week. And that was just, you know, goals. You know, the beginning of the year, we started out the year, I believe it was on the 7th of January, Hope, Goals, and Intentions. I think that was the title of the show, Hope, Goals, and Intentions. And, you know, the new year, we're coming out with all these ideas and goals and things like that that we're going to do for the new year coming out of 2020. And then here we are in April, you know, and I think that this is always a good time to reevaluate where we are as far as our goals, where we are with our intentions, and what we're doing, you know, what it is that we have intentions on doing. And so I thought that this was a good moment to talk about goals, but not really just accomplishing goals, but I wanted to flip the script a little bit because I don't think you'll find a lot of people talk about why it's difficult to set goals or why it's difficult to accomplish goals. You know, I can give you the percentages of, you know, by February you're going to be off this, and by May, you know, by December this percentage of people will complete goals, but nobody really talks about why that happens. Now, we have some, you know, there's some anxiety issues, there's just things that life presents that's just tough. You know, of course we got COVID issues and all kind of other stuff that life presents. But what about those personal things that we just struggled with? You know, just these last 7 days, I was going through some struggles. And just trying to even, the goal is just to prepare for the next show.
Mm-hmm.
So even just these last 7 days, I had, you know, difficulty in accomplishing these goals. I had posted something on social media, and you brought it up, Dad, a couple of times, and that's really what kicked off this whole process, here we go, of presenting this tonight. When I said, what challenges or tasks will you choose to accomplish this week or this month? And, you know, but then it's the thought of, okay, this is what I want to do, but you don't get it done. But it's like, well, why didn't I get it done? And, you know, yeah, laziness may be a part of it, or you got sick or whatever. But the thing that I touched on last week, and I wanted to share that starting out here. So looking at goals and what are some of the issues that I personally have, and I just wanted to open myself up and be transparent for everybody here, and just going through why I've had struggles. And, Dad, you can be transparent if you like as well. But I know with me, a couple of the issues that I've had that I really didn't see the need to really set a goal. You know, I'll just put the idea out in the universe, and our, you know, our favorite phrase is I'll shoot in the air and maybe kill a fish, and maybe I'll get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this way, this will save me the disappointment of the buildup.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that I can't, that's really, it's not really accomplishing anything. I mean, I may get things accomplished, but a part of that too is the process itself. And I realized that I cheated myself a little bit out of that process of going through that struggle and then accomplishing that goal and that full feeling of fulfillment. Full feeling of fulfillment? Is that feeling of fulfillment? I guess that would be the correct phrase, of accomplishing that goal. And then the other issue I had in the struggle is I allowed other people to influence my thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, and influence, again, that process. You know, talking with people, you know, getting insight. Well, what do you think? And then you get that one negative input, you get that one negative reaction, and then it's like, you know, forget it, that's all right, I don't need to do it, I'm going to do something else or whatever. You know, that negative input I allow to produce
mm-hmm.
the negative output of not accomplishing or completing that goal. You know, I tricked myself and allow my mind to think in this negative connotation and not staying true to the original goal, the original plan that I had in mind.
Wow.
So these are just a couple of things, again, I touched on last week, and I wanted to open it up a little bit this week and just talking about the struggles that I've had with goals. You know, we all have goals and things that we want to achieve. And maybe, you know, there's personal goals, you know, your relationships, financial goals, professional goals, or whatever. And setting these goals require, you know, steps and concrete plans. But again, you know, and I'm putting the question out there to all of you is, well, why is it difficult at times to set the goals? We know what the goals are, but how come it's difficult to set these goals? Think about, and this is just a reflection question here, you know, think about the things that you started, but why didn't you finish it? And if you did finish it, how do you reward yourself? And if none of this relates to you, if you can't even, you know, kind of get it or get what I'm saying, then think about this. We'll start out with a simple goal. What can you commit to 10 minutes a day? So, you know, why is it difficult? For me, it was difficult because a lot of times I didn't write down my goals. And really writing it down is one of the key components in accomplishing the goal, or even just starting the goal, or even just knowing what the goal is. Sometimes my mind goes in so many directions. And there's a movie, The Last Samurai, with Tom Cruise. And my dad and I, we always talk about this phrase in the movie, too many minds. And I get caught up sometimes in just having too many thoughts in my head. So in this movie, if you're not familiar with The Last Samurai, Tom Cruise plays this American by the samurai, and he's held in their village. And they, you know, they treat him well. You know, it's not like he's a, you know, like these regular POWs you see in these war movies where he's just in the corner in dirt and treated like crap. You know, they treat him very well. He's free to walk around the village. Of course, somebody's always following him, making sure he don't leave or nothing. But, you know, he's free to roam around. He observes their customs, their lifestyles. He's even allowed to join with them and practice in their martial arts and fighting techniques and stuff like that. So in this one scene, he's in this kind of a mock fighting thing with the samurai, right? With these wooden swords that they practice with. And Tom Cruise is just getting schooled, right? Because he's, you know, he's got no skills on the samurai, right? So they're just beating his butt, right? But he continues to, this one thing about him, you know, he always gets up, you know, the American way. No matter how many times you fall down, you get up, right? So he keeps getting up. And this younger samurai watches him struggle, right, and dealing with defeat. And keeps getting up, he keeps getting knocked down. So this guy comes over to him and he tells him, you know, too many mind. And he's like, too many mind? What do you mean? And the young samurai is like, yeah, you mind the sword. You mind the people watching. You mind the enemy. It's too many mind. And so basically the thing is that sometimes it just has to be no mind. You have to just clear your mind. And in the end of the scene, he takes a moment to contemplate these words, and they resume the fighting. And instead of getting all frustrated, he clears his mind. And then the fight, it just becomes a draw. But at least he's not getting whooped all the time. To me, that scene is very significant for me because, for me, the samurai sometimes is life and these goals that I accomplish because my mind is going in so many different directions. And I don't take a moment to just clear my head to accomplish these goals. So I hope that makes sense. Did I lose you, Dad? Did you fall asleep on me?
No. Actually, I had muted myself for a change because I was not wanting to make too much, and I have to stop now. I didn't want to make noise rustling through, you know, my pile of notes trying to find the show we did on it was on the 7th of January. I remember because it was Armand's birthday, you know.
Right.
And but, you know, you can never find what you're looking for when you want it. At least I can't.
Yeah.
So, because I was going to cheat. I was going to use the Cliff Notes from that show, you know, to parallel tonight's show, but I busted.
That's cool. You can keep looking. You can keep looking.
I busted now. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, how do I keep stealing when I've been caught? You know, herein lies the rub, you know. There's no point in the pursuit anymore. But I was making notes anyway, you know, and commentary anyway as you were talking. And of course, I believe that the example you used about too many minds, you know, and the way you put it, and I didn't think about it that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes almost a thing of mind, you know, you're minding too much, you know. A lot of times people say, you know, don't mind me, you know, or I ain't paying no attention to that. I'm not minding, you know, that, whatever the case may be. But like the way you put it, it's like I'm minding all these things too much, and it's like, well, don't mind any of those things, you know. And I didn't look at it that way, and that's what, you know, actually the young samurai was the son of the what do you call him? The head dude. I don't know. You know that. You know. You know those titles. You know, whatever the head dude's name was. That was his son talking to, you know, the Tom Cruise character. You know, and but anyway, the point being, you know, all that other stuff is a distraction, and that's what you're talking about. At least what I'm hearing you talk about. Is how easy it is to fall into a place of distractions. It's almost like, you know, I'm looking for distraction to justify being distracted from what it is I'm supposed to be pursuing. But I tell you one thing, I absolutely agree with you 100%. You know, and I learned this as a counselor. If it isn't, this is what my director, or what the director of the program I worked for would tell all of us as clinicians. And he would say, if you haven't put it on paper, and this is how he said it, that's how I'm going to say it. He said, if you haven't put it on paper, it ain't happening.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's like all that talk and all that thought and all that, you know, psychobabble, if it ain't down, it hasn't happened. And I agree with you, man. If a goal that isn't put on paper is just a thought that has yet to materialize, you know, and that's the great distraction of all, you know, having to discipline myself,
right,
to write
yep.
down what
yep.
I'm thinking I need to do, to write
yep.
down what I'm thinking I need to do, you know, instead of looking for the distraction, you know.
How many times have we talked about how thoughts are faster than our ability to, you know, to gather them, you know?
Yeah, that's a discipline, yeah. Yeah, man.
So, you know, now for me, you know, now it's funny you mentioned that discipline and as we mentioned, writing it down. So, like now what I'm doing and even preparing for these shows now, one thing that I've learned working with you and able to apply them in other things, even with the shows on Saturday, you know, writing them down, setting goals and writing, a to-do list, you know, because you have
mm-hmm.
to see it, you know, a checklist. And even with the checklist, you can, you know, sometimes it's those simple moments of having that list on paper or whatever, and you put that check by it, like, boom, I got it done, you know, and just that feeling, that small thing of accomplishment. But again,
absolutely,
I always pose that question of how do you reward yourself? Because I think that's one of the things that we've forgotten about. We've forgotten how to reward ourselves. We know how to reward other people. We know how to pat others on the back. But I know for me personally, I've always had a challenge in that. You know, I've always looked at
right on.
It's so much easier for me to look at the things that I didn't do rather than the things that I did accomplish. You know, so so, you know, a checklist is really good positive affirmations. And again, just questioning, I'm putting it out there to you again, ladies and gentlemen, is how do you reward yourself? And then the discipline, you mentioned the discipline. And that's the hard part, those breakthrough moments, you know, especially those moments when you don't feel like it. I'm just going to put, I don't feel like it. How do you break through
mm-hmm.
those moments when I don't feel like it? That's really hard for me, you know, the commitments. But being able to form a positive habit, that's what discipline is all about. Discipline can be such an overwhelming word sometimes, but it's all about just developing a habit, a positive habit. I like to add that positive part to it, a positive habit. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're pursuing success in business or sports or whatever, you know, the bridge, if you will, between wishing and accomplishing is in the discipline. It's in the habit. And then there's some technical aspects to it. If you have a pen and paper, I'm not going to get too much into it, but there's this thing called SMART goals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an acronym. The S is for, it means specific. In writing down your goals, so SMART goals, the S is specific. The M is measure. The A is it achievable? Achievable. The R is
wait. Slow down.
Okay.
Slow down.
Sorry. I'll go over it again. S is specific.
No,
specific.
No, you ain't got to go over
not
it
specific.
Again. Okay, achievable. Is it achievable? Okay.
Achievable. Is it achievable? Yeah, you know, your goal may be is I want to make everybody happy. Well, that's not achievable. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know. R is...
I'm sorry, man. Wait, before you continue, hold your point. I'm just looking at what what Chai wrote in the chat room. Maybe just the fact of getting it done would be the first reward. Okay, go ahead, man.
R is relevant. Mm-hmm. And T is time.
Is it relevance or relevant?
Relevant. Relevant. Relevant.
Is that
relevant?
A T at the end? Okay.
The T is time. Yeah, relevant. Yeah, relevant.
Okay, gotcha.
A-N-T. And T is time. You set a time to achieve
mm-hmm.
your goal.
All right. Timeline. All right.
Maybe just the fact of getting it done would be the would be the first reward. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But sometimes, I mean,
I know what you're saying.
I know
you're saying that's the expectation to get it done. But how do I reward myself for having gotten it done?
How often do we do something?
I can also see the point Chai is making, especially if it's somebody like me who doesn't have a great history of accomplishments. You know, I mean, I'm hell at writing down a goal, you know, but I'm real slow in the outcome. So for me, it would be a great reward to actually get something done, you know.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see both sides to that coin. Amen.
Yeah.
Go ahead on, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Just you know that, and that's true. I totally agree. That could be a reward within itself. But I think there are times when we take ourselves for granted, you know, and we accomplish the goal and we just keep going,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
not really just
mm-hmm.
taking that moment. And it's not an ego.
I agree.
And even if it is an ego trip, then it's a healthy balance. I think.
All rewards are ego. All rewards feed the ego. You know, ego ain't a negative thing. You know, I mean, you said ego trip. Well, then that takes it in another direction. You know, that has to do more with anytime I start ego tripping, you know, the only thing that matters in this world is me. You know, so that can become narcissistic in a heartbeat.
Right.
You know, but to feel ego gratification for a job well done, oh, that's a worthy, you know, reward in my book. You know, too many are overachievers. And an overachiever is somebody who's never satisfied with what they achieve. They're constantly trying to achieve more than the achievement. So the goal becomes elusive, you know, because it's never quite good enough. You know, so I'm feeling mm-hmm. what you're saying, man. If I don't take that pause for reward, I'll never have a yardstick I can apply to measure accomplishment. I like that.
Yeah.
Right on, man. You got
right
me cranked now. Yeah, no, I ain't. I'm going to go back and review the archive.
And you know, it all kind of flows with some of the things that we've talked about, even mindfulness, you know, process, goals. But I think, you know, and I like to. Like I said, to bring it up now, as we're in the fourth month of this 2021 year, you know, people are getting vaccinated, cities are opening back up, the weather's getting warmer again, you know. So I think this is just a good time to reflect and really look at, you know, what are your goals? You know, where are you? You know, basically taking that self inventory, as we like to put it. So
yeah,
that
if
was
I
just,
can jump in one more time.
Sure.
Right quick, you know, you said something that I think needs to be highlighted. You know, as you know, it's getting warmer, and you know this part of the world is opening up again. All those things need to be taken into consideration when I'm setting goals, meaning knowing what the warm weather could bring, knowing what this country has just come through, gone through and what it may be faced again, I need to be sure that the goals I'm setting for myself based on what I've learned over the course of the last year, are they achievable? You know, they're, like I can talk until cows fly, and I ain't seen a cow fly yet, you know, about what I want to do with the most recent book that I finished. But if it includes book signings, I need to be real clear about several things. I need to be real clear about, you know, what facilities are available and what their COVID practices are and what my safety measures are, you know, and I may need to use all those to give myself a realistic financial goal in regards to, you know, peddling my book. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. You know, one thing that as far as dealing with this, the pandemic that we talked about at the beginning of starting to show up again, excuse me, one of the things we talked about early at the beginning of starting this show back was being able to adapt in this pandemic, you know, because things aren't normal anymore. Things aren't going to be normal, back to normal, whatever that is. There's no more of that. So, you know, even though there's vaccination shots going on and people are getting their, you know, there's still many countries that haven't received vaccination the first. You know, the United States is only 20% of the population, 20% of the population is fully vaccinated, but there's still plenty of other people that haven't got shot one. There's plenty of countries that still haven't got anything. So that's
and
a,
there's
I was just
plenty
saying
of comfort countries that are speaking are spiking all over again too. You know,
you know the there's variants going on that it's mutating. You know, so that's a great point that you brought up. You know, and setting those goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, being real, if you guess, you know, being real with it, you know, and looking at what's out here and the challenges you might face. Is there an echo?
Yeah.
Or do I have a, is there an echo going on with me?
You got too many
voice?
Minds.
Okay.
No, I'm
that's
not
what
here.
It is. Echoes in my head.
No, I'm not hearing it anyway.
So that was just a couple of some things that I just wanted to touch on with me personally, and I just wanted to be transparent for a moment, because you know I can we can you know if you research goals and accomplishing goals or even why it's difficult to accomplish goals. The things that will pop up on Google always talk about, well, you know, doing this and doing that. But it's very difficult to find why it's hard. You know, I mean, there's, you know, anxiety issues and procrastination, you know, things like that. But it's those other things I think that we don't really talk about. We don't really share. We don't want to share. You know, for me, you know, another thing is that it didn't bother me to do just enough. I was cool for a long time just doing enough just to get by. You know, I didn't really think about any next steps. I didn't think about going to another level. I was cool with maintaining, you know, C average. I was cool with that. But I realize now, you know, when setting goals and accomplishing goals, that was the habit, that's the habit that I needed to break. That's not the proper discipline that I needed to follow. But I know now why it's been difficult for me to set and accomplish goals because of the habits that I had in the past. Did that make sense?
Right. Well, You know, first of all, you don't need to keep asking that.
Okay.
Because, you know, because we're not going to take a poll to see, you know, what the outcome score is, you know. It's, you know, the challenge is to make it make sense as it applies to me and not hold you accountable for doing that for me. You know, so you're putting out some real talk. One thing that, you know, as well, I can't say we get old. Well, maybe I'll include me in that. Hopefully I ain't done getting older. You know, as we get older, you know, we're held that much more tightly to, you know, our accepted behaviors. And changing accepted behaviors is still having to embrace accepted behaviors. Because the accepted behaviors don't change. It's just the way I deal with them that changes. In other words, I add an option. You know, my acceptable behavior, I'm using what you said as the example. My accepted behavior through all of my time in school was to do just enough to get a passing grade. That was an accepted behavior that translated later in life. I'm just making up dialogue right now. And the accepted behavior that translated later in life worked its way into the work world. I did just enough to earn my paycheck. You know, doing just enough is a survivor skill, you know, and sometimes survivor skills serve us well. You know, I may be at a job that doing more than, you know, what is good enough for me, you know, may create a completely different chain reaction. You know, there's nothing worse than being at a job where you're giving it, you know, more than it deserves, only to be treated less than you deserve. You know, that reinforces, again, the whole idea of doing just enough. You know, I lived, man, for my first 35 years in life, I lived by potential. Whenever my first started with my mother, then, you know, with your mother, you know, and then, you know, though my peers, you know, peer pressure doesn't go away. You know, it just changes with age. You know, I would always hear, man, you got so much potential. I heard it on the baseball field. I, you know, if only you practice more. I heard it, you know, like, man, you know, you can really write. If only you studied more. You know, I've heard it all, you know, all of those first 35 years or so, you know. But I always heard potential as a compliment. You know, so somebody said, man, you got so much potential. I thought, bet, I'm doing all right. I never heard the rest of it. The rest of it was left for me to fill in, you know, and the rest of it, you know, I didn't hear from them because I heard all I wanted to hear from them. They told me what I needed to hear. I had so much potential. But the rest of it was, if only. I didn't hear if only. I heard potential. So, you know, so that's always, you know, the brunt of my yardstick in determining so many of these points that you laid out. You know, when I look at a goal, when I look at setting a goal, you know, I have to look past the potential of the goal. If I don't, then potential is as far as the goal will get. You know, this goal has the potential of really doing something good for me. So next goal, you know, so, man, I think we all have something we're branded by through life. And I think that brand, you know, stays with us to remind us of whatever it is that we're made up of, you know, what our breed, what our stock, what our pedigree, you know, what our ancestry, what our lineage is, you know, and that brand, you know, can be, you know, externally seen or it can be internally realized, but it's there. You know, the influence of others is the first influence I get in life, you know, and assuming, as you assumed, you know, you had no choice, as I assumed. You know, but like using you as the example, is you assumed at 2 years old, you figured me and your mama knew what we were doing. You know, that in fact, in your two-year-old mind, we were perfect. You know, so thinking that we were perfect, any way we treated you, in your mind, that was the correct way to be treated. Now, you know, hopefully you don't feel like, you know, you were abused as a child by your parents. But you definitely, you know, were mentally abused in some stretch by me not being there, you know, for so many years of your, you know, of your single-digit life, you know, and your mom having to do what she had to do trying to be whatever required for her as a single parent. You know, so no matter what it is that you do, you're still going to be influenced by that original brand, you know, and that original brand is always going to reveal itself whenever you set out to accomplish a goal. You know, that's just how it works. You know, so to overcome that, I'm feeling you. It's not just in accomplishing the goal, but giving some positive reinforced reward. You know, that's the kind of thing that so many people miss in life and don't even know they miss it, that don't even know we miss it. You know, getting positive reinforcement from others instead of saying, I don't care what they think about me. You know, we do care what others who matter to us think about us. Now, we can talk all that bullshit we want, but those who matter to us, absolutely it matters what they think about us. And depending on how we were rewarded, you know, even if we don't even know that that reward was a negative reward, a negative reinforcement, that's, you know, that's something that we live with. But this is something that we can shift in how we reward or pay off ourselves. I really love this, man. I'm sorry for going so far with this. Go ahead on, man.
No.
You got me cranked right now, man.
And there's we can even continue this next week as well, because I do want to kind of talk more about, you know, maybe there's some other reasons that kind of hinder us, generally speaking, not just me personally. I wanted to open it up, you know, starting out just, you know, again, being transparent and talk about my personal issues that I deal with setting goals and accomplishing goals. But, you know, there are some points that I think that we generally deal with when it comes to goal setting and goal accomplishing. And like I said, I can go more into it, but just to lay it out there, I can follow up next week. So, for example, there's four things I think that kind of hinder our abilities. Number one is fear. Number two, things that hinder goals.
Goal accomplishment? Oh, goals, okay. Forget that. Yeah.
Just say goals.
Okay, one is what? What's the first one?
Fear. Number one is fear.
Got it.
Number two, poor self-image.
Yeah.
Number three, no buy-in.
No.
B-U-Y, no buy-in.
Can you expound on that a little bit? Or just move on to four?
Let me give four.
We can always talk about that.
Four,
yeah.
And four is just we don't know how.
Huh. That ain't no jest. Don't know how. Right on.
Don't know how. Going back to three, no buy-in. Let's add to that I had something else with it. But it's like finding the balance. We can even say not finding the balance. We talked about
that. I don't like this term, no buy-in. But there's something to this, no buy-in. You know, that sounds like investment to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Then do a lot of people, this is kind of the whole no mind example as well. you know, how often are we working, and then while we're working, we're thinking about, I need to spend more time with my family. And then when we're spending time with our family, we're thinking, damn, I can't spend too much time. I got to get back to work. You know, and
yeah.
then at the end, we just say, oh, shit, I don't have time for anything. Mm-hmm. I can't do nothing, you know.
Yeah, I don't have no time for myself now. Yeah.
Nah, I don't have time for anything. I don't have time for work. I don't have time for my family. I don't have time for me. I don't have time for nothing.
Yeah, I don't have no time for nothing.
And we're...
Yeah.
And we just get frustrated, and we lose the balance. So that, you know, that's kind of, that goes into that part with the no buy-in. But, yeah, you're right, the investment for yourself.
But, you know, still, I'm coming back to that point you were making, man. I'm sorry to keep dragging you back, you know, but that rewarding thing in the checklist, see, that has that can counteract frustration all over the place. You know, if I have a healthy reward system, you know, that will address all of the negative points you made about no time for family, no time for job, no time for self. Well, you know, it's not just about making time, but it's about recognizing the reward that comes from making time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's got to be investment there that has to do with, if I don't have a buy-in, then I'm not going to have any recognized investment. I'm just painting by the numbers, you know. And I mean, like, there's a whole lot of folks, I'm not going to say black folks, even though I want to. There's a whole lot of folks who feel like they've done all they need to do in raising their children if they pulled them out of a negative environment and put them in a decent home, you know, and threw some money their way. It's like, I've done my job. Now, you know, it's up to you to figure it out. You know, there's a whole lot of people who approach, you know, their children like that. Like, I've given you all of what you need to succeed except direction. You're going to have to do that on your own.
Yeah, direction.
You know, so
direction. Yeah.
That's how I'm feeling. No buy-in. You know, as a parent, you know, four things that hinder goals. You know, like when it comes to my children, if I have, you know, goals for myself that have to do with, you know, providing for my children, you know, there has to be a buy-in. There has to be an investment in them. You know, not just leaving them to their own, you know, their own devices. Anyway, man, transparency is a dangerous thing, man. Yeah.
you hit it on the head, man. It's not the lack of time, but it's the lack of direction. The direction creates time. Motivation creates the energy. How often do you see people? How often do we see people planning for their wedding but not planning for their marriage? You know?
I'm still stuck on motivation creates energy. I love that. I'm writing that one down.
It's not the lack of time, but the lack of direction. Wow. Direction creates time. Motivation creates the energy. Yeah.
Can you repeat that one more time so I can get them all?
Sure. It's not the lack of time, but the lack of direction. Direction creates time, and motivation creates energy.
Man, you talk too fast. I know I live in Texas, you know, the land of fast-talking people, but I'm old, man. Shoot.
It's not the lack of time.
Not time. Right, but...
The lack of direction.
But... Direction, right, okay. And
direction creates time. Motivation creates energy.
Yeah, man. Okay. So the top of the list then has to fall under the idea of motivation. Okay, I got it. Right on. Yeah, what motivates me? If nothing motivates me, then
I can just do enough to get by.
If that much. There's always room to leave it up to somebody else to assume responsibility for me. Oh, my God, how often do I see that happen? Especially with young adults who have lacked direction. You know. Wow.
So, yeah, we can
beautiful,
dive more
man.
Into that in more detail next week. I would love to just keep talking about goals and things like that, because I'll tell you, you know, like I said, I struggle with the why sometimes, and that's just the creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the creative process that I deal with the show, and just reminding myself of the why. And if anything, I have my selfish moments, and these shows create motivation for me and help me with direction, especially when I have these moments of being transparent. I tell you, I feel a whole lot better than I did an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, man. Isn't that something? Dialogue has a way to cause that, man. You know, dialogue is the outlet of thought. You know, paper, putting it on paper, you know, is its footprint or fingerprint. But dialogue, man, that's thought's outlet, man. Dialogue, you know, it starts moving things. Well, you just got to be talking about that. You know, I mean, I can think with the best of them, man. You know, if thinking was the Olympics, I wouldn't be able to hold my head up. My neck would have so many gold medals around it. You know, sometimes I think so much I have to take a nap. I just wear myself out, man. You know, man, thinking, you know. So, yeah, man, no. I mean, I got my pad, I got my pen, I got a backup pen, and I got my cup of water. So if you want to keep on going with this, man, I got no quabbles. I got no problems with that, man. You know?
No, that's all I had for tonight. I'm going to save the rest for next week.
Okay. Mm.
But
so much with
before,
so much for 20 minutes. So y'all don't get the inside joke. Me and Will were framing tonight's show, and he said, "Well, I want to pursue goals, but I don't anticipate going any longer than 20 minutes, and that I may not even go that long if I talk too fast." That's what
right.
I'm talking about. Yeah. Oh man, beautiful man. Beautiful, beautiful job. Yeah.
So just a couple of quick notes here. Going back, our friend in the chat room, Chai 18, we'll, instead of saying and mispronouncing that, we'll just call her Sue. That's Sue.
Okay.
So just to let you know. You know,
I know that. I just wasn't, you get on me about saying phone numbers. I wasn't going to
say phone numbers,
give away
right. I know. That's the same thing, right? I got permission, so it's okay. Artie may not want you to give her full name. You know, our guy Black Gable, he may not want me to give his full name. So I just have to make sure that people are comfortable with that, you know. That's all I wanted to get on with goals. And like I said, we can always, you know, touch on goals throughout each week, you know, save a little bit for each week. And I think I'm going to do some follow-up stuff as well, too. So just like you know, you're posting notes from Saturday's show, I think I'm going to start posting notes as well as follow-ups for these shows, because that'll help me, too, in establishing and accomplishing my own goals. But I want to take it slow and not dive into a whole lot right away. And I wanted to I wanted to get a black view, you know, tonight as well. So I wanted to make sure we had enough time for that.
Well, okay. I think the one thing I may have overdid it, so I don't know if I even want to start on that. But the other thing I do want to talk about is this thing called Marcy's Law. I don't expect anybody to have a clue as to what I'm saying when I talk about Marcy's Law, but it will unfold in due time. If I can't, if I will, if you will, I'll unfold it over the next 15 minutes or so.
How do you spell that?
MARSY apostrophe S. Marcy's Law. And, of course, now the dog would show up. Okay, that's all right. Police who shoot civilians can hide their names under the victim's under the victim's rights law. That's what the court ruled in Florida. In the decision regarding police use of force cases, a Florida appellate court has ruled officers who kill citizens can hide their identity under a measure designed to protect crime victims from violence and harassment. So police who shoot civilians can hide their identity under a measure designed to protect crime victims from violence and harassment. Do you remember you said something a couple weeks ago, maybe last week, you know, and it was a heck of a thing you said. And I don't have the quote in front of me right now, but in essence, you were talking about what did the victim do to be murdered by the police?
What did they do this time? Yeah, what did they do?
What did the victim do? To be murdered by the police. What did the victim do to be murdered by the police? Now, what the Florida appellate court said has ruled officers who kill citizens. You feeling me? Officers who kill citizens can hide their identity under a measure designed to protect crime victims or victims from violence and harassment. So I, as an officer in Florida, can kill you, and I can hide my identity under the same thing that was designed to protect you from violence and harassment. So my violence towards you, I can hide my name under the law that was created for you to protect you from me. Now let me explain what I'm saying. Okay, a three-judge panel of the First District Court of Appeals on Tuesday, as in 2 days ago, reversed the lower court decision that had denied on-duty officers protections under Marcy's Law, a provision that had been adopted in at least 12 states, including Florida. So Florida was one of the 12 states that had originally denied duty officers from being able to use protections under Marcy's Law. But they reversed themselves. In October, a USA Today ProPublica investigation showed that as police across the nation face scrutiny over accusations of brutality and systemic racism, law enforcement agencies, particularly in Florida, increasingly were utilizing Marcy's Law to shield the identities of the officers accused of the violence. So, what is Marcy's Law? It's named after Marcellee Ann Nicholas, a University of California Santa Barbara student who was stalked and killed by her ex-boyfriend in 1983. Only 1 week after her murder and on the way home from the funeral service, Marcellee's mother was confronted by her daughter's ex-boyfriend, who was out on parole as a suspect. He was on parole. Not parole, bond. He was on bond as a suspect. He confronted her in a grocery store. He confronted and harassed her as if, how dare you,
allow me to be arrested for the murder of your daughter. How dare you? He harassed her. This is the law that was created so that that would not happen to her. Her mother had no idea he had been bonded because the courts are not compelled to inform victims' families. So there she was. Not only he was out and on bond, and here he was in her face while she had just come from her daughter's funeral, you know, from this guy who had yet to be convicted, which he eventually was, and he died in prison. But along the way, this law was created. And now this very law is what the police are hiding behind in Florida so that you won't know that they're the ones who are accused of killing your brother or your father or your mama. You know, that cat who might stop you for a traffic offense, you have no idea. That's the dude, you know, or maybe fired from the Florida Police Department but hired in the Illinois Police Department. You'll have no idea that this is the dude that just a year or two ago killed your dad. You won't know anything about who it was that did it because they're hiding under a victim's law. You know, that thing you said when I read this Tuesday, it hurt me so much it leapt out of my chest. What did the victim do to be murdered by the police? What did the victim do to be murdered by the police? Even today, and I've pretty much avoided most of George Floyd's trial because it just goes through too much post-traumatic stress in listening to it. Even today I heard the defense for the guy, Chauvin, getting into George Floyd's drug abuse background. Not just talking about, you know, that he used drugs, but breaking down the combinations of drugs and getting into the whole theme of drugs that he may have used or was even in his system, as if that justified this dude, you know, for putting his knee on this brother's neck. You know, because what, he had drugs in him, or are they saying that he never would have died if he hadn't had all these? So it's like the victim's fault that the police murdered him. But if not for this issue, this Marcy's Law, we wouldn't even be knowing the name of the cats on trial. We wouldn't even know the names of the four the policemen, you know, who were, you know, a part of the whole deal. If not for Marcy's Law, we wouldn't even know what we would be watching on the video of this murder. It would all be blacked out, and names would be, well, we wouldn't even be in the court. Only in the court because Marcy's Law made it possible. But what Florida is saying is that we ain't going to let that happen down here. So you go ahead and kneel on that brother's neck if you want. You ain't got to worry about your name being known. You know, you don't have to worry about any of that. You know, you're going to be able to hide behind this thing that's designed to protect the victim, the very victim you murdered. Anyway, that just that just kind of took me out, man. So, yeah, you know, and so, you know, why am I even talking about it? Just to raise some degree of awareness, because these things come and go in the news, you know. And see, here's my point. An appellate court of Florida, now keep in mind, we're talking about Florida. You can bet that it was three people. You can bet that those three were appointed by Trump. See, and this is the thing that we need to really be clear about. We can talk about presidents and all the cabinet members and all them folks all we want. But if those who sit on the bench are put there to be sure that systemic racism is alive and well, names you'll never know about, even when you go in to vote, names that you have, if you don't know who the hell they are that you're voting for, you're giving them permission to carry on. You know, in places like Texas and Florida and the Southern Belt and Illinois, and it doesn't matter where, you know. Yeah. If we can hear all this arguments about, you know, these judge appointees and the number, and I think Trump has something like 400-plus, you know, judges he appointed, you know, man, they're the ones who decide, you know, your rights as a victim. And if they decide you don't have any, you don't have any. You know, just like that. So
you know, we need to understand that the shift in direction and the change in government, you know, if it ain't starting with this idea of blind justice, then ain't nothing about justice is blind. They ain't doing nothing but peeking through the blindfold, man. You know, and that's how they ought to just go ahead and put it up there. Lady Justice holding no scales, they ought to show one eye just looking right through that blindfold, man, looking to see who I'm judging to do. I'm sorry, man.
That's a great point.
So, you know.
No, that's a great point.
You know, I wanted to at least also, if I may, acknowledge, we didn't really talk about it last week, and I just wanted to acknowledge Kim Janey. And her, even though she's acting mayor, doesn't matter, you know, she's acting as mayor, and all mayors have that requirement that they're expected to do, act as a mayor. So they can say acting mayor as if that don't mean anything. But who else is, you know, who else is acting as mayor? Because the one who was acting as mayor appointed her. So that means she's the mayor, you know. She just was appointed, not elected, you know. But the first black person and woman mayor of Boston. And we're talking about, man, after 199 years, the first black person and the first woman mayor of Boston after 199 years. And 81 of those years, all the way up to where my man Walsh stepped down and appointed her. And, you know, he stepped aside, rather. He didn't step down. He stepped aside to take, you know, an appointment with Biden. So it doesn't surprise me that he would have picked, you know, a black woman to step in. In his words, it's time for change, and change is good. Those are his words. Paraphrasing. But this is the first person, the first in 81 years, this is the first non-white male Irishman to hold the position as mayor. So there's some big cultural shifts that are going on. And even the people running for mayor right now, the irony of it is there's like six or seven of them, three women, Kim Janey, four women, and two white men, six people running for mayor's office so far, but none of them of Irish descent. So we're talking about a major shift in Boston politics just in that degree at all. And what really warmed me, and I'm not going to get, because it's, to me, to understand the significance of her appointment is to understand the history of Boston, you know, and that's what I maybe we can get more into next week, if you know, if possible. But I'm not going to do it now because it's way too much to try to talk about it. At least I think it is. And I can take a crack at it though if you want. But we got like 10 minutes, right?
What are some of the points you wanted to?
Well, you know, first of all, we know Boston as far as the sketchiness of our history books. And we know Boston, you know, like the home of Paul Revere, the Boston Tea Party, you know, and you know, a lot of the issues of the Revolutionary War, which is important to understand. And I don't want to leave those points of history out. But one of the things that I want to just tap on, Boston, of course, is the state capital and the 21st most populous city in the country. I didn't know that. You know, the region had been inhabited since around 2400 B.C., man, by the Massachusetts tribe of indigenous people called the Shawmut. The Shawmut Indians, you know, lived there since 2400 B.C. In 1614, explorer Captain John Smith decided to give the land the name New England to appeal to the growing number of settlers, and I'm using the word settler with a little finger thing of quote, asking that you maybe think about a more accurate name for those settlers, you know. Within a few years, more than half of the Shawmut tribe had died of smallpox, a wonderful gift from Smith and his pillagers. You know, so an indigenous, a culture you know, that had been around for 4,000 years, you know, was decimated in a few years by pillagers of land that they decided to call something else so it would attract a growing number of settlers coming over from New England. A fleet of ships helmed by Puritans, and you have to look up Puritans and know what I'm talking about. They're not too unlike evangelicals by today's standard. A fleet of ships helmed by Puritans left England in 1630 and soon merged with the Pilgrims from the Plymouth colony. Again, our little sketchy history talks about the Pilgrims landing on Plymouth Rock, you know. But if you give Malcolm X, you know, his right, you know, the Pilgrims didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on the Indians. But anyways, he didn't say it as a joke. The Puritans later changed the name of the settlement to Boston after a town in London, Lincolnshire, England. In the 1630s, Boston Latin School, where notables such as Benjamin Franklin, John Hancock, and Samuel Adams studied, and Harvard University were founded. Boston Latin School is still a prominent school in Boston, where many of the politicians, many of the entrepreneurs, many of the people, you know, of notable recognition are still attending. And I'm getting close to the deadline, but it's like hard to, it's an amazing thing to take it upon myself to do some research. I wanted to get a full feel of what it meant for Kim Janey's appointment, and I just didn't feel like the news, which the news did what the news does, but I didn't feel it really gave true acknowledgement and recognition to the significance of this appointment. And I thought history would reveal more the more that I took a look at Boston's history. You know, despite the premium placed on religion, Boston's Puritans weren't keen on tolerance. The crime of being a Quaker, and you got to look up Quakers, was punishable by either imprisonment or death. Celebrating Christmas was banned, and in 1643, the city welcomed the first slave ship to Boston Harbor. You know, so I'll stop there. There's more. I'll pick up on it next week. But it's like the best way to understand, you know, a culture is to study its history, you know, to me. I guess there'll be those who would disagree. You know, it's like for me to understand the culture of addictive behavior, I mean, the culture of the addict, I have to understand the history of addictive behavior. You know, that's where I began to realize that a person who's about to enter into the, you know, road of recovery from their addiction of choice, whatever that may be, the first thing they need to do is really study that addiction of choice, really understand its properties and its impacts and its effects, because the challenge is going to be to find something of equal or greater value to take its place. So as Boston is unfolding, and as Boston is struggling to eradicate many of its affronts, rather to indigenous people, you know, or the black people, you know, it first needs to get a firm grip of its own history so it can recognize that it has to be something of equal or greater value to promote its own healing. You know, otherwise it's going to do similar to what Chicago did shortly after Harold died, you know, when it had or what happened to America after Obama finished his two-term stay in office, you know, matter of fact, maybe that's a better example. Instead of America recognizing where its growth product and change and shift stood to be, you know, it completely vacillated. It just turned on itself and did a complete about face and decided a racist way of life was better than an equal way of life. So let's declare war on the poor, not poverty. Let's declare war on the poor. You know, let's declare war on the so-called minorities, you know, and let's not live by the code of all people created equal. You know, let's you know, reinforce manifest destiny, you know, as being, you know, a proclamation of our own choosing, you know, rather than truly place the plaque where it needed to be, in God we trust, not in God we take advantage of. So anyway, man, that's all I'll go into right now. But thanks for letting me even talk about that much of it. And I really do want to talk more about, you know, Boston politics next week for a few minutes, if our slate allows. I know there's always so much going on, man. We haven't even talked about the current event. We haven't talked about Biden. We haven't talked about, you know, the struggles of COVID relief, the concept of the infrastructure, and what that means to the economy, what the economy means to the economy and to the people. I mean, this, you know, this dude, Matt Gaetz,
Yeah, now what, right? Yeah, I think this was a good break, if you will, from even just the current events that we sometimes, you know, touch on. You know, talking about goals and Boston politics, I sure hope things are better in Boston than it is here in Chicago. You know, we thought things were going to be different with a black female mayor here in Chicago, and it just seems like the same political monster just continues to rear its head here in Chicago. So I hope that it's different in Boston. I'll be rooting for him, for real.
Well, you know, I asked your brother about that, you know, and he said it has the potential of change, you know, your brother Armand, you know. He's saying Boston is, you know, like that. It's not like that. It's like Boston is kind of, based on what he was saying, it's taking a look at itself. You know, now Chicago politics, when Harold was elected, had a chance to take a look at itself, but it decided not to. That city council did pretty much the same thing that what's that double chin dude out of Kentucky? What's it? Mitch McConnell. You know, what the Republican controlled Congress did to Barack Obama was very similar to what the city council did to Harold. So, but the grip of Irish politics has never really left Chicago. And that's what, you know, you use the comparison. Man, that's, like, perfect, because they're so similar, you know, Chicago politics and Boston politics, you know.
Yeah.
And so of a black female mayor in Boston is a black female mayor in Chicago, you know. And, you know, man, this is a heck of a time, man. And so we'll see. Right? Tune in next week.
I will enjoy that comparison. That may not be the intention, but I know for me personally, I will definitely be looking, because I didn't know actually that transpired in Boston. So
yeah,
I will definitely be, for my own personal research, just comparing Boston and Chicago's politics, because there's so many similarities in history.
So many.
So to look at where it could go in Boston, and where they've, you know, dropped the ball here in Chicago. So
dropped it over and over again. Man, you go down to the state capitol, right, and you walk down what I call the Hall of Shame, and you see all those governors that wound up in jail. It's like, man, and I'm not talking about back in the, you know, 19th century. I'm talking about 20th century governors, man. It's like, what's up? I mean, one after another, Democrat and Republican. It's like, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Chicago should be its own state. I don't know how it wound up in Illinois. You know, that man, there's nothing about, you know, the second largest city in Illinois is Rockford. You know, so there's no, you know, Chicago just, you know, man, maybe if Chicago was its own state, then maybe you would have a quarterback with juice.
No, don't even go there, man.
On the Bears, man. You know, anyway.
And now you're talking about And now you're talking about comparing the Bears and Dallas, you know, similarities and differences and all that
man.
Stuff. But.
And if Andy Dalton couldn't win with what he had in Dallas, what? Anyway, yeah. But no, you gave me a challenge. You gave me a challenge. I'm gonna get on my due diligence, my goal setting trend. You inspired me with tonight's show. Thank you so much for that. But I want to do some work on the comparisons of Chicago politics through the 20th century, you know, because Chicago politics was so run by the Irish throughout the 20th century, and compare it to, you know, Boston politics today. So we didn't have anybody in the queue, I assume, because I'm sure you would have brought them in.
Yeah, we've got some listeners, but nobody was brave to press the one button tonight, so it's cool.
Well,
I enjoyed
it,
and I'm always grateful
night.
For those that still listen.
Maybe it was a listening night, man. Maybe it was a listening night because, you know, the goal trends that you set, that's something to hear, you know, more so than make commentary about. You know, that was beautiful. That was beautiful, man. Beautiful show tonight, my man.
You know, again, the one thing that I kind of enjoy is that what I hope is that our shows provide people the opportunity to take their own personal inventory, you know, and to better themselves. You know, that doesn't mean you got to chime in and be in the queue or be in the chat room. Even though Dad,
that's right.
I would love you guys to engage with us in discussion, it's all good. You know, I know that the things that the most important thing is that you take what we have to share and that it helps, it makes us better, and we hope that it makes you better too.
I found out that I don't have to talk to listen.
Yeah.
I mean, I just recently came to that conclusion, like over the last 2 or 3 years. I don't have to talk to
them. That's true. I don't know if a lot of people agree with you, but I feel you, though. I get it.
I should say I don't talk. I should say I don't have to talk to them. I give myself some wiggle room, man. Come on, damn.
But at the same time, I've also
recognized that as soon as I open my mouth, everything about me is at risk. So, you know, I've also learned that over the last couple of years. But go ahead, man. Go on. Land this here.
No,
great show.
I just wanted to let everybody know as well. You know, check that out on Saturday, 10 a.m. Live shows of Write Your Own Book Club. Again, shows are archived, but it's always good to check out the live shows. You definitely need to bring a pen and pad. That phone number is 516-387-1587. Write Your Own Book Club, Saturdays, live on Blog Talk Radio at 10 a.m.
Yeah, but that's if one is inspired to do that. You know, and I really want to clarify that. If it's something that one is considering, writing their own book, then Write Your Own Book Club is the place for you. Go ahead, man. Just wanted to sneak that in. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah. All right, so next week. So we'll be back live every Thursday. Please check out our archives on Blog Talk Radio and your favorite podcast platform as well. So, as always, Dad, it's been a joy. It's been a blast. And I'll hear you next week.
I'll hear you next week, bro. Love you, man.
All right. Love you, too. Ladies and gentlemen, please be safe out there. Mask up. Take care of yourself. Have a good night. God bless.
That made me who I am.